Eat Drink Indiana Radio is powered by eatdrinkindy.com, where Central Indiana turns to learn about food from farm to fork and drink from grains to glass.
Welcome to Eat Drink Indiana Radio on WFYI HD to the Point. I'm your host, Jolene Ketzenberger. Well, Happy New Year. And for our first show of 2016, we have got a great one. We've got a restaurant and chef focus going this week, and we will start out by looking back at 2015 with Indianapolis chef Jonathan Brooks, who had one heck of a great year at Milk Tooth, which got national attention from Food & Wine, Bon Appetit, and the Food Network. We'll also talk with Chef Carlos Salazar of Rook and find out what that restaurant will be like when it reopens soon in a new, larger space. And speaking of new restaurants, we'll also talk with Chef Leighton Roberts of Vida, a new restaurant from the Cunningham Group that will open in early February. And finally, we will be talking with Food Network's Ted Allen of Chopped about his upcoming appearance at the Fantastic Food Fest at the Indiana State Fairgrounds, January 16th and 17th. So stay with us for more here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio on WFYI and WFYI.org. Well, we are going to start out our first Eat Drink Indiana Radio program of 2016 by taking a few minutes to look back at 2015 with a chef who had a great year. 2015 was definitely the year that the national food media discovered Chef Jonathan Brooks and Milk Tooth, a restaurant that quickly became a local favorite after it opened in October 2014. I talked with John recently about Milk Tooth's first year, all that national media attention, and about cooking at the James Beard House. January, a new year, 2016, but I want to talk about 2015 and how big of a year that was for you and for Milk Tooth. So kind of take me through, you know, from when it opened. It was October, right?
Yeah, we opened October 2nd of 2014.
Right, so and that was before your 30th birthday, is that right?
That is correct, yeah.
So was that a goal to get the restaurant open?
Yeah, I think at some point in my mid-20s, I told myself that if I didn't have a restaurant by the time I was 30, I was going to do something else.
Oh, no.
So barely made it.
Well, good for us that you did. So, but you opened to a lot of anticipation. So people were ready to come in. And how'd it go right from the beginning?
Yeah, people were certainly excited about Milk Tooth. We'd been talking about it for a while, and people kind of knew me through Recess and some supper clubs that we were doing. So we did open busy and quickly had to figure out what we were doing.
How was that early on? Like, do you remember what the first day was like?
It's kind of a blur. I mean, there were a lot of nerves leading up to the first day, but it was immediately fun and has been really fun.
Since. Well, now the restaurant's kind of designed to be fun. It looks fun. I mean, you have a sort of a casual, sort of lighthearted kind of feel. It feels relaxed.
Yeah, we wanted there to be light colors and interesting things on the wall, clutter to some degree, I guess, because, you know, there's enough kind of dark, brooding wood restaurants in the world, and we wanted to do something a little different.
Well, now tell me about the space a little bit, because it's a former garage. So I mm-hmm. saw it early on when there was nothing in there except garage stuff.
Right.
Could you see the restaurant in your head when you saw the space?
Yeah. So at the time we found the space, Ashley, my wife, and I were living above Bluebeard.
Not far, just across
right,
the street.
Right, just about a block away. You know, we kind of had put up with the Cultural Trail being built and Bluebeard being built and there being a 12-foot hole in our front yard when we had a young kid. And so we were looking for a space around this time, and we knew that we wanted to stay in Fountain Square or Fletcher Place because of those things we felt like we put up with. We kind of deserved to be there.
So you were going to see it to finally come to fruition
because
people kept talking about how great the Cultural Trail was going to be.
Exactly. And it is great. And we're glad that we're there. We found the space. I had taken my car there. I don't remember what was wrong with
really?
It at the
when
time.
When it was still a shop?
When it was still a transmission shop. And, you know, thought it might be a cool idea for a restaurant. It became available. And I'm not the most, I guess, aesthetically creative guy. So there were some people showing me other spaces, and this was really just the first one that I could see a restaurant in.
How do you see it? Because, you know, like I said, I walked in and the lift was still there, and there was, you know, junk all around and grimy windows and stuff like that.
Well, we still have grimy windows and the lifts and junk everywhere, but
but you can get breakfast instead of waiting for your car to get fixed.
Exactly.
But so now, how did you incorporated the lifts into the tables, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah, I had some help building some really pretty tables, and we decided, I forget whose idea it was, I think it might have been Tom Batista, to put the tables right on top of the car lifts.
Could you see where the kitchen was going to be? I mean, because it was just an empty space.
Yeah, I think I knew immediately that I wanted an open kitchen and to kind of be able to oversee the dining room and for that kind of fun experience with people.
Yeah, because they can see you. I mean, your kitchen, I mean, it's right there.
Yeah, we're right there in your face, yeah.
You know, and there's a counter, so people can sit at the counter.
Uh-huh.
Do you like that, being right there with people?
I'd say most of the time I really like it. I do have a lot of fun talking with people, coaching them on the menu if they have questions, or just seeing my friends when they come in. It can be frustrating sometimes. You know, you can't have those intense conversations
I was just asking another chef about whether you actually yell in the kitchen because you're right there out in the open.
Mm-hmm.
So do you?
I do not. There might have been a few occasions where I raised my voice, but I'm pretty calm for the most part.
Yeah, is it kind of a chill kitchen?
I think so. Yeah, I mean, you know, we certainly. It's a hurricane in there sometimes when we're getting really slammed, but it's always fun. And
now, in case people haven't been there, and I told you I had a little trouble trying to describe the food to somebody else when they said, so what kind of food does he make? And tell me how you would describe the kind of food that you make.
Well, in Milktooth, we make breakfast and lunch food.
Right.
First and foremost. But I think there's a lot of room within that to kind of have fun and take, you know, fine dining influences, world influences, personal influences, and force people to eat it for breakfast.
So the other day, there was crispy beef tongue on the menu. I noticed an Instagram photo the other day that sent me to looking up a word. So fatunta, was that right? It was like, and when I looked it up, it said the best garlic bread you'll ever have.
Yeah,
so
basically,
is that something like it?
Garlic toast. It's toast. It has a connection to breakfast, so we can throw some beef tongue on there, and it makes sense to me. And people ordered the hell out of it.
Did they really?
Oh yeah, sold out in about an hour and a half. I didn't have too many to start with, so.
So now I see a lot of those things where you say, you know, only X amount of something available. Do people come in and say, "I saw that on Instagram this morning," and they want that?
Oh, absolutely. I have one guy that he'll see an Instagram in the morning. He'll rush all the way downtown from up north, and occasionally he's been too late, but for the most part, he's in time and very excited.
Yeah. Well, so I think people are excited about the restaurant, and I think that's been sort of a part of the story arc. People got excited very early, including national media. So tell me a little bit about all of that and the attention that you've gotten from Food and Wine Magazine, Bon Appetit, the Food Network.
Yeah, so about 6 months after we opened, or maybe less than 6 months after we opened, I got a wild phone call one afternoon from Food and Wine telling me that I had won 2015 Best New Chefs with 10 other people. And that was certainly, I don't even know how they were aware of us. It was certainly a surprise. Shocking.
Didn't think
it was real.
I was going to say, did you think that the phone call was real?
I mean, there was a brief moment when I thought somebody was just messing with me. And that it would be a really good joke. But, yeah, it was real.
What did you do? What was your reaction?
Well, they immediately told me that I couldn't tell anyone.
Oh, no!
Which, of course, I told my wife.
Well, yeah.
So I have to. And I think she might have told a few family members.
So what was it like?
But I don't know. It was so kind of out of left field. I mean, you know, we didn't open the restaurant to win awards or chase awards. You know, I'm familiar with Food and Wine, but I haven't had a subscription of Food Magazine in years, and it was definitely not something I was thinking about. But it's great. It's been a great honor. Just met so many cool people.
Well, now you got to do some cool things in connection with mm-hmm. that. So tell me about that. So you were...
Yes, so we got to go out to the Aspen Food and Wine Festival.
Wow. Which something was I've always wanted to do, I got to say.
Super fun. Got to take Ashley out there. You know, the group of chefs that I'm with this year, not having had the experience before, but I couldn't have asked for a better group of new friends and wow. People that are inspiring. So
now then you were also tapped for Bon Appetit's Hot Tin Restaurants of the Year.
Yep.
Across the country. So
right.
among the top 10
yeah,
restaurants.
Yeah, we were number 10, so we were worst of the best. We just slid in there.
But, you know, you're...
But we're in there, so we'll take it.
Yeah, so now how was that? Was that pretty exciting too?
That was, I couldn't say more exciting or less exciting, but it was different because it was a restaurant award. There was less focus on me, which may be more comfortable for me and I think more fun for the staff.
No, but you that involved a trip to New York, right?
Yeah. We got to go out to New York and cook at Bon Appetit's big party. It's a great time. Got to take about 8 people off of my staff out there, including
my
wife and my sister. That's one of the proudest moments, one of the most fun moments we've had in the year that we've had the restaurant, just getting to take people from Indy out to a big fancy party in New York and have a good time.
Oh, my gosh. Now, okay, then you were also in New York in August cooking at the Beard House with a group of chefs from Indianapolis. Now, how was mm-hmm. that?
That was really special, too. I know a few of the guys had cooked there before, but for a whole dinner to be based around Indiana chefs was humbling to be part of and just super cool.
How was it cooking in the Beard House with its notoriously small kitchen?
And we're notoriously big guys, the group that went out there. So
it's true.
It was tight, but, you know, everybody was so excited and calm and focused to be there that it was a great time.
We've been talking with Chef Jonathan Brooks of Milktooth. We'll hear more about what 2016 might hold for him later in the show. And we'll hear from local chefs Carlos Salazar and Leighton Roberts as well. So stay with us for more here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio on WFYI and WFYI.org. Well, if 2015 was a great year for restaurants in Indianapolis, then 2016 looks like it might be even better. And it's going to start out strong with the reopening of Rook. The Asian-inspired restaurant from Chef Carlos Salazar will be considerably bigger than the former location, and it will feature a beautiful open kitchen. I got a look inside the new Rook recently and talked with the chef about his vision for the new space.
I mean, it's still the old Rook, but revamped. A lot better. It's what I envisioned what I wanted Rook to be.
What you wanted all along?
What I wanted all along, my dream restaurant. You know, what, from food to service to cocktails to wines, to the look of it. You know, it's exactly what I wanted it to be.
How do you describe the look of it?
It's modern. It almost gives it that almost like that Momofuku ramen Asian look, because with the maple tables. The red, and I mean, it's just, it looks like it, but it's not too Asian where it's like, you know, you walk into a Chinese restaurant.
So how do you describe the food for people who might not have been familiar with some of the things on the old menu?
I'm still sticking to that theme of like an Asian street food, but yet me, almost like that new generation, you want to make it different, be servable, be pretty. So more modern, I guess.
What are some of the things people might see on the menu?
Pig ears, for sure.
And why do you say for sure?
I just played with it so much, and I love snacking on pig ears. I mean, it's better than Lay's potatoes chips, you know what I mean? So it's crispy, it's porky, you know, so it's real good. I like making vegetarian dishes. I'll have a few vegetarian dishes on there where it's not a salad. You know,
and that'll be nice. People will appreciate that.
It's a composed dish. You know, it's a restaurant you could go to and be like, I'm vegetarian. I don't want a salad. Perfect. We have, you know, we have all our vegetarian stuff. It's not a salad, or it's not just a unthoughtful put together dish for someone like you that just came in.
Now, do you have favorite things that you, that people can expect to see iterations of, or favorite types of foods? Ramen?
I plan on having ramen all year round.
That'll be great.
I think in the colder season, I might have more than what I will have in the summer. But I want to have at least two ramens, one vegetarian and one pork, chicken, beef, seafood. And, I mean, a couple things that it's going to come back here are the mushroom dumplings, the karage, and the beef fries, and the pig face hash. Because those were our most popular items, and I think people will kill me if I don't have it.
Well, some of them have become associated with you, right?
Yeah, and I mean, I want to say famous, but you know, we got known for our pig face hash.
You did. It became one of your dishes.
Yeah, and I won an award for it at the Taste of Elegance, so I had to keep it. But I mean, what I'm going to do with the pig face hash is change it up a little bit differently. It could be a lettuce wrap. It could be a rice bowl, you know. So I mean, and it could be on a sizzling plate, just like traditional how they do it in the Philippines, with a raw egg on there. And what you have to do at the table is mix it up so the egg gets cooked on that sizzling platter. So it's hands on, and you know, it's not just, it doesn't go to your table and you eat it. You know, you go to your table, mix it up. Or, I mean, keep it the way it is. I mean, it's up to you.
Now, tell me a little bit about the sort of Filipino focus of that, because we've seen a little bit, you know, with on the Rook menu. Are we going to see more of that?
You will see more. I don't want to be known as a Filipino restaurant. I think some Filipinos that came into the old Rook was like, well, you know, I thought this was a Filipino restaurant. We're not. I am Filipino, and I want to keep that with what I'm doing, but it's never going to be just a Filipino restaurant. I'm going to have a couple things on there, or I could have 10 things on there. It just depends on what I'm interested in at that moment and what we could get in locally that I could use for that Filipino dish. And it, again, it's not going to be traditional. Don't get mad at me and be like, this is not what my mom used to make. I understand that, but, you know, I can't get that here. You know, what Full Hand Farms can get me, or what, you know, it's, that's what I'm going to use. And if I want it to be spicy, I'm going to make it spicy, you know, but I'm not going to, you know, I'm not going to put anything bad on a plate and serve it to you. Or I'm not going to make anything weird and be like, oh, this is Filipino. Clearly it's not, you know, so I'm not going to lie to you. It's just going to be my take on what Filipino or Japanese or Vietnamese food to me is.
We talked a little bit about this earlier. Tell me how the menu evolves from the space, you know, for how the kitchen influences the menu and vice versa.
Well, I, like I said, I had the menu from the very moment we found out we could move. And I had the biggest list ever, and it was insane. When I found out what was going to be my kitchen, I was able to dwindle it down, what's going to work for my line, for what the equipment I have. So I really made the menu, or I chose the menu items for what my kitchen is, or for what I have. I've learned from a great chef saying that you make your menu because of your kitchen. You know, your kitchen's not there for your menu, because you can't change stuff around unless you have millions of dollars. But your menu can change.
How does the layout affect that?
I mean, it's very big. I mean, if you don't want to look flustered, if you don't want to look confused, you need to know your layout. You need to visualize where you're cooking something, or where your prep is, or where your plate is. So it's smoother. It takes away from it could be a, you know, from a 20 to 30 minute ticket time. If you're smooth and prepared and you know where everything is and it's set where it's supposed to be, it takes 5 to 10 minutes off that ticket time. So it helps with service, and it helps with the person cooking it. You know, they're not going to be sweating bullets running around going over there to pick up this, and then the other part of the component of the dish is over there. So you're not running around. You're staying in one place, and all you got to do is 180, 180, 180, and now, the dish is there.
Now, people are going to see that, because this kitchen is open, I mean, it's completely open. So tell me a little bit about the thought behind that.
It's nerve-wracking. I mean, it's wide open. I mean, there's no hiding from anything. You know, you drop a piece of food, someone's going to see it. I mean, it's how you recover. Pick it up, throw it away, wash your hands, and start over. And with me, with the open kitchen, is that it makes my staff be more prepared because they know I'm about to put on a show, so I need to be prepared. I need to learn my lines. And so if they come in with that set of mind of being prepared, it's going to make service a lot better.
Yeah, tell me just a little bit about the rest of the restaurant. So there's a bar, so there's beer, wine, cocktails. So tell me a little bit more about that.
So, yeah, we got through your license, we got full bar. We got my friend Joshua Gonzalez from Thunderbird doing the cocktails, at least in the beginning. I mean, if he wants to keep doing it, he's more than welcome to because he knows what he's doing. I can't, you know, he's helping me out.
Well, and it's all part of the same restaurant group.
Yeah, I mean, we're all helping each other out. Like, I helped Thunderbird out with their menu in the beginning. So, I mean, it's you're going to expect great cocktails, great wines from, you know, we have a great wine guy from Black Market, Chris, and I mean it's not gonna be like the old Rook where you eat and go. You could actually relax and take a seat, order a couple of cocktails, eat some more, and order more cocktails and eat some more. I mean, you know, you feel free to stay, hang out, and enjoy your time, and don't rush yourself.
We've been talking with Chef Carlos Salazar of Rook, which will be opening soon in the new Slate Building at 501 Virginia Avenue. For more information on the new location, go to rookindy.com. As we've pointed out here before on eDrink Indiana Radio, the Indianapolis restaurant scene just keeps growing. And the Cunningham Restaurant Group, which operates Mesh on Mass Ave, Union 50, Brew Burger, Stone Creek, Boulder Creek, and other restaurants, is one that will soon be expanding again. In early February, Vita will open in the former Amici's location at 601 East New York Street. Executive Chef Leighton Roberts fills us in on what we can expect from the new restaurant.
I've worked with Mike for almost 4 years now.
It's Mike Cunningham, or Cunningham Restaurant Group.
Our chef, the executive chef of the company, Carl, me and him have known each other almost 15 years. So over the last 5 years, the relationship with Mike and me and Carl, it's grown exponentially, you know, and his comfort level with what we wanting to do as chefs and as a restaurant group has grown as well. So I think this is his way of allowing us to have a lot of influence on what we want in a restaurant, and I think he's finally comfortable with letting us make those big decisions. And I think that's what Vita's become. In the beginning, it was going to be a small test kitchen, inviting chefs in, and I think it's evolved into something where Carl will have more of a kitchen environment to work out of, to have his office here at the restaurant rather than at our big office, so he can get in the kitchen and bring ideas to the table for our other restaurants and kind of, you know, move Stone Creek into its next era of what it's going to be. And I think we'll have influence here on all of our restaurants in the group.
Now, tell me, go into a little bit of detail about your own personal experience, because you had been with Cunningham Group and then left and then came back. So just kind of walk us again through some of your career.
Yeah, I guess my career in Indy started at 14 West. I came in as Chef Tony was kind of on his way out, going to be the dean of the school. Took over 14 West, was there 5 years. And then Carl, our corporate chef, he had started working as the chef at Stone Creek and then was moving up the ladder rather quickly. And Mesh was opening, and Carl said, "Hey, I got your guy. Let's get Leighton on board." So we opened Mesh up. I did a 2-year tenure with Mesh, I guess. You know, we had, I wouldn't say differences of opinion. Maybe I just got burnt out. Mesh is a big operation. And I had an opportunity. Dan Dunville was leaving Meridian. I had an opportunity to walk into Meridian, which I thought was, you know, it still is a beautiful restaurant, an amazing setting, you know, so I had the opportunity to go there and do some great things, and I did. But then right before Union 50, I guess it's been over 2 years, Carl started calling me about 6 months before I started, and also then I noticed Mike was calling me as well, saying, dude, why don't you come back, you know, got back to Mesh. It was time to open Union 50, so we started working on that menu. We got that open. We fell into a great opportunity with Thomas Melvin to come on with the company from Prime 47. Thomas has done great. He's followed right in line with getting menu changes done and keeping up the tempo of the restaurant. So when Thomas came aboard, I went back to Mesh for the third time.
That's kind of, you know, so your career has gone in and out of Mesh, so that's all right.
That's kind of nice. They needed me, you know, so let's hope that the third time's a charm and I don't have to go back and go Mesh again.
Because you are here at Vita, right? And yes. So you have been involved in this idea from the beginning, right?
Yeah, we started talking about Vita about a year ago, of what Vita was going to be, and it's transformed from a small platform restaurant of 40 seats to now we're up to 126 seats, which seems big to some, but comparative to what we do as a group and what we're used to, it's rather small. So it's kind of evolved from a test kitchen per se to a place where we'll allow Carl to be in a restaurant during the morning when there's not lunch going on and able to still me and him have a relationship in the kitchen where we can talk and build menus because I help Carl build the menus for all of our restaurants. I have a hand in a little bit of that. He does most of the heavy lifting stuff, but I help him, you know, we write the menus and write the recipe books together. So this gives us a chance to really focus on that side of it and really R&D on a small scale for our all of our group.
Now, tell me a little bit about the process of the building out of the restaurant, because this was a historic structure and there was a lot of discussion as to what was going to happen to it. You know, it used to be Amici's back in the day.
You know, we started construction and it got held up. We were supposed to be open already. But the Historic Society is what it is. They have a lot of their own ideals about the way you should do construction, and we had to work around that. We had to, you know, the restaurant had to be jacked up and a new foundation had to be put under it, which was a daunting task, and it took a lot longer than to be expected. You know, basically the four corners are what is left of Amici's and everything else is new inside. It's got new bones, a new structure. Every rafter, every joist has a new joist, or so we had to build, the outside structure had to stay the same.
But now you've incorporated some of those old pieces in the interior, right?
Yeah. Our bar top is reclaimed wood from a lot of the old floor joists that could be saved. There was a lot that couldn't be saved. All the original outside walls, the wood siding has been saved and refinished, and it'll be the nice burnt siding you see in our bar area and on the back side of the restaurant.
Well, that's kind of nice. That's a nice homage to what it used to be.
Yeah, it is. I think it is a nice thing. You know, Mike has done that in several restaurants. We've got a lot of reclaimed tables, and a lot of our chairs are made from reclaimed wood, and that's kind of his thing. He really enjoys incorporating the history into that.
Now, with the name Vita, it seems like it's going to have a focus, life, fresh living, that sort of thing. And one of the striking elements in the restaurant is actually living. So tell me a little bit about that wall.
Yeah, we're using a company, Maximum Grow. Our farmer, I guess, our grower's name is Justin. He owns the company. It's an Irvington-based company, a small company. We started talking to Justin about 6 months ago about an opportunity to head up our greens and our herb program. And it's evolved into a 250-pod wall of greens on our pantry station in the kitchen.
And these are growing. These are pots of greens that are growing on a wall.
Yeah, we have arugula growing, red vein sorrel, wood sorrel. We've got red oak and winter density head lettuce, and so our menu is based on the ability. I'll be able to call Justin 3 weeks out on a menu and have him start growing something, and he'll have it ready for us. He's got about 3,000 plants growing at the in the grow room at his facility that will in turn three times a week. Sarah, our small farmer, she'll be coming in, harvesting off our wall. We won't necessarily be pulling off the wall during service, but she'll be harvesting and getting things washed up and putting the walk in, and we'll have a nice full wall every night for service that everybody will ooh and ah over, and it'll be wonderful.
I think so. It's very striking, and it's definitely eye-catching. Tell me a little bit about the food and where you're going with that.
Where we're going with the food, I know a lot of people who know my food. I'm very heavy-handed in the butter and the cream, but that's not my whole focus always. But it really sells. But this restaurant, we're going to focus on drawing those full and those big flavors out of fresh rather than out of fat. You know, we're still going to, obviously we have a dry aging room that's going to be shown off, so we're going to have plenty of pig butchery. We've got George Turkett on staff, which just finished up. I think he's only the second person to ever finish the Smoking Goose apprenticeship. So we got him on board, so we're going to be having some whole, you know, nose-to-tail butchery, and we're producing salami. We're going to use our room to... We're going to write our menu based around our charcuterie program. We're not going to, per se, do a big charcuterie board that's so popular around town, but you're going to see our charcuterie influencing all of our things from appetizers to salads to entrees. It'll be rolling through. But I'm really focusing on incorporating the living feel of the wall.
Now, describe the food itself. What types of dishes will we see?
We will see some of our appetizers include like a lardoletto salami. We're doing a cured lardo and then incorporating that into a whole muscle salami. So it'll be nice big chunks of cured fat inside, you know, shoulder roast of the pig. But we're really focusing the charcuterie program. We're trying to go low salt and low flavor to really showcase what Indiana farmers are raising, you know, to really showcase the flavor of the pig rather than just the juniper or just the pepper or the bay that's in there. You know, some of our appetizers include that. We're doing a Amish friendship bread, so we're going to do a toasted. So it's going to have some cinnamon and some nice, you know, winter flavors, but we're going to do a little Amish friendship bread, and there's going to be the sliced lardoletto on the plate. We're going to do a burnt Manchego aerated cream with Ivar, which is a piquillo pepper, Eastern European piquillo pepper jam. So that's going to be one appetizer. We're going to focus on the menu, Jolene. We're going to have several vegetarian options. I think there's 5 on the first menu.
That's a lot. That's very nice. I think that will be very appreciated.
Yeah. And what I think we're going to do, we're going to state on the menu that, you know, the appetizer portion will be available for this price for an entree size. So not only will we have, you know, I think we have 2 entrees that are vegetarian, but we'll have a salad and 2 appetizers that will be available as an entree size as well, if that's what you want to do. Or you can almost do your 5-course tasting as a vegetarian right off the menu.
What sort of entrees can we expect?
Entrees, my probably personal favorite right now, we're going to do an Alsatian tartlet, which is going to be my my feel on a charcuterie garni. One of my favorite things as a kid was mixing my sauerkraut and my mashed potatoes together with my sausage. So we're going to do a nice buttery tart with, you know, Robuchon potato, house fermented kraut, and then a butter, smoked butter, whitefish sausage. And then on the plate will also be a smoked cream braised pork belly and a finocchiona salami with baby fennel and braised leeks. And it's going to be delicious.
Now, how do you describe the type of food? Like if someone, you know, was wondering, well, what kind of restaurant is it?
That's hard to say. The first real restaurant I would say that I guess grew up in as a young cook was Chariots, and Chef Anoush was an Iranian man that went to France and Germany to train, moved to Texas of all places, cooked, learned southwestern cuisine in Texas and barbecue, and then came to Louisville, and then, you know, into the Bible Belt, and, you know, honed his skill on southern Louisville cooking with all those influences. It was, you would go in his kitchen and it would just be you would have a different smell at every corner of the restaurant. You didn't know if you were in an Indian kitchen or if you were in an African kitchen, you know. So a lot of those bold flavors have always stuck with me of the Middle Eastern food and that, you know, and I really, you know, he really loved the Alsatian German cuisine as well, which really went with his background. So I think you're going to see a lot of, you know, classical, you're going to see a lot of French technique, but with a lot of bright aromatic flavors and really focused on fresh, as much of things if I can get off that wall as possible.
We've been talking with Chef Leighton Roberts, executive chef at the new Vita restaurant that will be opening in Indianapolis in early February. Stay with us for more here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio from local chef Jonathan Brooks and from Carmel native and Chopped host Ted Allen. Well, as we noted earlier on today's show, 2015 turned out to be a terrific year for Chef Jonathan Brooks of Milktooth. Not only was he named one of Food & Wine magazine's Best New Chefs of 2015, but Milktooth was included in the list of the top 10 best new restaurants in the country in Bon Appetit. And Milktooth was recently featured on the Food Network program Top 5 Restaurants. But what are the chef's plans for 2016? And was there any downside to all the attention?
So far, so good.
So do you have, are there big plans coming up?
I wouldn't say big plans with Milktooth. You know, we just want to keep doing what we think we do well, feeding people and having a good time. We do have some plans possibly for another restaurant in 2016.
Now, what sort of restaurant would that be? I mean, you got the breakfast lunch thing going.
Yeah, it'll be dinner.
Dinner. Yeah. All right.
Yeah, we're going to take things a little bit, a little more elevated, a little more focused on service, great wine, yeah. Sexy food.
Yeah.
But still, you know, we want to maintain that fun. It's really important to me that whatever I do is fun.
Well, you're not a stuffy guy, right?
I hope not, yeah.
So I would imagine it would be fun. Has the food changed?
We've certainly figured out what works for Milktooth, what our boundaries are, but there aren't many. I mean, you know, there was a very cool moment in November when it was warm outside and there were about 30 people on the patio eating chicken liver for breakfast in Indiana in November. And I was like, wow, we can really do whatever the hell we want to do.
How is it having a family, having a little boy, you know, in and out of the restaurant? Is mm-hmm. it... you know, he's obviously growing up in and about and seeing you do this. How is that?
Yeah, I love having him and my wife in the restaurant. It's super fun. You know, it's a playground for him. And hopefully one day he'll not necessarily work for me, but have more fun with me there. Chop some carrots, peel some onions, be more useful to me there.
Well, what if you say, I mean, my gosh, you know, you raise up your own little assistants there. Right.
Right.
Has there been like a downside to any of this? You know, I was just reading something in the, you know, in the media the other day about a chef saying that some of the awards and kudos that they had received didn't really work out all that well. Has there been any negatives?
I can't speak to that person's experience, but for us, I don't really think there's been a downside. I mean, I'm tired. There's been a lot more involved this year than I thought. There would be, you know, time away from my family that I thought I would have. But, you know, we couldn't be happier. We're having a great time and everything's still fun and we don't take ourselves too seriously. So maybe that helps us out.
Now, so also in the news has been a local chef. And again, one of the chefs that you were at the Beard House with, David Talent, closing his restaurant. He just closed it New Year's.
Mm-hmm.
And he kept saying when I talked to him about that, more time with my family, more time with my wife. Just he hadn't gone on a vacation in a long time.
Yeah, so. We ate there last night, actually, had a great meal. And, you know, they've been doing this for 12 years, so
right. They
deserve it if that's what they want to do.
So what do you think as going to Restaurant Talent? That has been, you know, arguably the best restaurant in the state for a long time.
Mm-hmm. No, we had a terrific meal. And a great time. I hadn't been back to Bloomington for a while.
When you said, you know, you might be, you know, the next restaurant that you open would be dinner and wine. Is it going to be along those lines or something completely different?
I think it'll definitely be a little bit different. I want to express a side of my cooking that I don't think anyone's seen yet and definitely kind of push what's going on in Indianapolis.
Yeah, so what's I want to hear more about the side of the of your cooking that we haven't seen.
It's going to be sexy.
Yeah? Yeah,
that's our goal, is to make sexy food that people feel sexy when they eat it, and it's still in a very refined, very tightly paired with wine, or at least suggested with wine in a new way, but hip and casual and a lot of fun.
Well, it sounds great already.
Yeah.
Are there any food influences that you have, that you have, you know, anything that has influenced your type of cooking or your food philosophy or your style or any of that?
I think, you know, traveling and having really great times around food has influenced me more than anything. I've gotten the opportunity to travel with some great friends and family that love food, and I want to give those people those experiences in town, not have to go all the way across the world to have them. Best meal I had in 2015.
Okay, what was the best meal you had?
Was at Acheval in Chicago. And the food was great, but I got to go with my brother, who I rarely see, and my father at the same time.
Oh my gosh.
And you know, we're all very different, but we just had an awesome time in a great restaurant.
Oh, what'd you have?
We had everything on the menu, basically.
So was it wonderful because of the food or because of the people you were with or a combination?
No, it was definitely a combination. It was the right time, too. You know, it was a surprise. My brother was in town doing some business, and I needed a break, needed to see the men in my life. So
Aww. It
was perfect.
We've been talking with Chef Jonathan Brooks of Milk Tooth. Stay with us here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio for an interview with another famous local food name, Ted Allen of Chalk. So here's a fun event that's coming up in Indianapolis. The Fantastic Food Fest will be held January 16th and 17th at the Indiana State Fairgrounds. In addition to lots of exhibits, samples, products, and information, you can also check out demos by Food Network favorite Ted Allen of Chopped. I talked with Ted recently about what Fantastic Food Fest goers can expect.
You still have family in the area. Do you get back to the Indianapolis area very much?
Yeah, I'm back at least a couple times a year. I'm behind on my Indy visits now, as I am on everything else in my life that isn't Chopped. because of Chopped, we'll do 105 episodes between 2015 and the first month of 2016.
Oh my gosh!
So, and you know, each episode eats up a day. So it's that is a great problem to have. It
That's
does
right.
tend to make it hard to see my mom.
Right. So, but and I imagine she would like you to come visit more often, right?
What mother wouldn't? but this is also one of the reasons why when Fantastic Food Fest pops up in January, I jump at the chance. And, you know, January is not usually my first choice of a time to visit Indianapolis.
Well, right. The weather's not going to be great. Although when you were here for the Super Bowl, we had terrific weather. It wasn't so bad.
Well, and look at right. I don't know what it's like for you, but in Brooklyn it's pushing 60. So
I know. I'm walking around in a jean jacket today. So.
I still have trees with leaves on them. I mean,
I know. What's up with this?
I know.
We could go into that, but Fantastic Food Fest. So you're going to be here January 16th and 17th at the Fantastic Food Fest at the State Fairgrounds. So tell me a little bit about that kind of appearance. Do you like that sort of thing, those sort of demos and meeting people and being out and everything?
I love it. I mean, I especially love doing demos. I love doing public demos in particular for a range of people who are mostly regular home cooks, maybe some people who are enthusiasts of one kind or another. But I have learned a lot from chefs. I work with great chefs every day, all day long. talking about nothing but food, and I picked up a lot. And so in the middle of January, in the middle of Indiana, certainly the kind of cooking you want to talk about is winter food, braises, roasts.
Oh, yeah.
Nourishing things. And for, I like to bring techniques that are simple but really impactful.
Yeah. So what can the fest goers expect?
Well, I haven't decided on these specific recipes yet, but when it comes to turkeys and pretty much any other roast, I have stopped brining.
Oh, really?
Entirely. I no longer want to put a roast that I want to have browned underwater.
Okay.
So I'm using I don't even like the term dry brining because those two things, that doesn't make sense.
Right.
Liquid. The late chef Judy Rogers of San Francisco has a great cookbook that introduced me to the idea of salt rubbing meats like chickens and turkeys days ahead of time.
Okay.
And what that does, and there's no need for a brine. What that does is it initially draws the moisture to the skin, so it dries out the meat, but then through osmosis, that moisture returns to the meat and it takes salt with it. So
oh,
you can
really?
Season a turkey all the way down to the bone, and the breast meat, for example, is going to be nicely salted all the way through.
Really?
The minute you carve it. And I love it. Also improves the texture of the meat. So little things like that that anybody can do are the kinds of techniques I like to pass on when I do a demo. And I also like to crack jokes and answer questions. And it's really fun to meet people who watch our shows. So I'm really looking forward to it.
Well, now, is there a type of question that people tend to ask? You know, are there, you know, do you see trends? You know, they're always going to want to know about this or about that.
It's hard to generalize. I mean, when you're in my line of work, they're always going to ask some questions about the show, that's for sure.
Right. They want to know about the celebrities and the chefs and that sort of thing.
Yeah. And, you know, hey, you know, in recent years, we've had Danica Patrick cook on our show.
Right.
But, you know, another example is something I've done in the past. I like to demonstrate things that are a little surprise, but always simple, but sometimes a little surprising.
Okay.
Like the idea of, it's not a new idea now, but the idea of cooking potatoes in buck fat.
Right.
Or I have a recipe in my latest cookbook for a bruschetta that is it's the first recipe in the book, half tomatoes, half strawberries.
Uh-huh.
It's fun because people, they go great together.
Sure, but they're unusual together.
They are. It's a little surprising, and it's something that your guests are going to bite into, and the flavor will be somehow familiar and somehow unfamiliar at the same time, and they'll think for a second and say, oh, I get it.
I have to say it's really good because I have tried that one.
Oh, thank you.
Absolutely.
That's one I've demonstrated a lot in the past. I would not do that in the middle of January because it's not tomato or strawberry season.
Well, that's true. But that kind of surprising sort of thing, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you have recipes that you really have especially loved from the books that you wish people would make, you know, ones that they really should try?
I think they should do all of them.
Of course they should, right?
Absolutely. You know, another example, one thing I might want to do at the Fantastic Food Fest is really stolen from my friend Scott Conant and perfect for winter, an approach to making polenta, a creamy polenta that is just so, polenta is nothing but cornmeal, milk, and butter, or cream if you want. But Scott has an approach to, Scott loves polenta, and in his restaurants, he cooks it for 3 or 4 hours. You don't need quite that much time, but if you do it for 90 minutes or so, you can take something as humble as cornmeal and make something that's just sexy, just really luxurious and beautiful and silky. And it's not difficult. It just takes a little patience. I think it's kind of ironic that most of the food I like the best, especially for cooking it myself, is food where time is the most important ingredient. And it's not something fast.
Right. And there you are on a time clock, right? At work all the time.
At work I am.
Right.
But at home, I like to braise things for hours.
Well, and I think...
And that polenta is a great example of it. The recipe in Scott's, this is from his Scarpetta cookbook.
Mm-hmm.
His recipe calls for half milk, half cream. I make it just with milk.
Okay.
And it's still pretty decadent. It's 8 cups of milk to 1 cup of polenta.
Oh, my gosh.
And you cook that slowly in a pot on the top of the stove with the lid on, stir it frequently. But you stir it constantly at the beginning when you're getting it with a whisk and you're getting it started.
Right.
And it produces this beautiful silky polenta that's just perfect with, you know, roast turkey or with, he tops it with a ragu of mushrooms.
Oh my goodness.
You could do it vegetarian. It takes something really homey and makes it surprisingly sexy.
Well, I think
that might be something good to do.
Yeah. Well, I think they would find that surprising.
Yeah. And also it's great because you're producing a really luxurious, tasting dish for pennies.
Well, that's
meal is not expensive.
Exactly. So you know, that has a lot going for it right there.
I think so.
Well, I think that'd be good. So now I'm looking forward to that, you know?
Yeah, maybe that's what I'll do.
We've been talking with Carmel native Ted Allen of Chopped, who will be appearing at the upcoming Fantastic Food Fest, along with Hugh Atchison of Top Chef and Food Network stars Butcher Babe, Lariel Gavin. For more information on the event, check out fantasticfoodfest.com. You've been listening to Eat, Drink, Indiana Radio on WFYI HD2 The Point. I'm your host, Jolene Katzenberger. I hope you had a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. And thank you so much for tuning in to our first show of 2016. And thanks also to our guests this week, Chef Jonathan Brooks of Milktooth, Chef Carlos Salazar of Rook, Chef Leighton Roberts of Vita, and the Food Network's Ted Allen of Chopped, who will be in town for the upcoming Fantastic Food Fest. And thanks also to producer John Katzenberger for helping to bring you Eat, Drink, Indiana Radio.
Eat, Drink, Indiana Radio is powered by EatDrinkIndy.com, where Central Indiana turns to learn about food from farm to fork and drink from grains to glass.